weekend all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to a special May 19th Basketball Africa League edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Voice of America.
The Voice of America is an official broadcasting partner of the new league, and we'll give you daily updates on the 12-team BAL tournament right through to the final on May 30th in Kigali, Rwanda. In results Tuesday at the Kigali Arena, Petro de Luanda of Angola scored a comfortable 84-66 victory over AS Police of Mali. And AS Saleh of Morocco edged another police team from Cameroon, FAP, 87-84. Now, under the Basketball Africa League rules, each team is allowed four foreign players, which means it must have at least eight local players on its roster. So far, several American players have stood out during the first 3 days of the tournament. American guard Terrell Stoglin led the Moroccan side Saleh Tuesday with a game-high 28 points. Stoglin has ties to here in the Washington area. Before beginning his professional career, Terrell played two seasons for the University of Maryland men's basketball team. The university is located just outside Washington, D.C. In fact, if you listen closely to my colleague Jackson Vunganyi's interview earlier this week with Brian Karungi, the general manager and co-founder of Rwanda's Patriots Basketball Club, Jackson mentioned how he and Brian played some recreational basketball at the University of Maryland. Meanwhile, Czech Tierro stands tall over most of his colleagues at our Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. Czech is a former professional basketball player from Mali who works for the VOA's French to Africa service. And Czech has been providing nice analysis for us during the Basketball Africa League tournament. Prince Nesta caught up with Czech after Petro de Luanda's win over AS Police of Mali. Here's Prince.
Tough loss for the Malian team, Czech.
Correct. Tough loss for the Malian team, yeah. I mean, the basketball is, if you watch this game today, you will notice that it was expected for everybody, for Angolan team to beat Mali team. And if you know the record and the history of Angolan teams, they are known to beat all country in Africa to wear Africa Cups. And they are a very good team, and they're solid. They went with the eight players on their national team. They are experimented. They have a good tradition on playing together. You know, if you go with eight players out of 13, that's very good. I don't think they have done much recruiting, but they went with eight players. That's tremendous for eight players to be playing together, national team, and carry to this team of PAL. They really did good. And versus the Mali team, they have several players are local, but they went with new players, like you see the number two, the point guard, Marcel Mitchell, and also the Joseph, number 33 from Mali. Both are Americans. And so those people I was added to the program along with Ibrahim Thomas from Senegal, the big man for Mali team that had a good game toward the end. I think it was a little frustrated all around the game today. But other than that, Mali team, the local players did good. And Sherif Aydara is from overseas. He played China before. So they haven't had enough time to play with each other to understand how this tournament is done. I don't think they have done a good job with that. But I think every team was in that situation, you know, and you just have to come up with another solution to win. And Angola did best against Mali today with that.
John Pedro, the Petro player actually recorded 17 points and 17 yes. rebounds. What a player.
Yes. What a player. Yep. He's an all-around player. He's a big man that can score that kind of point and rebound. He pretty much averaging a double-double right now on the first game. So that's a good number. This is the kind of players the NBA is looking to get, you know, when they want to look at stats. A big man that can really put numbers, you know, and that can really play good like that in the first show and also show his talent, you know what I mean? And he's a tremendous. So, yeah, Pedro is a 30-year-old player. And he will have chance to really prove himself to us as we go. And if he do good, he will be one of the best scorer or the best players on the tournament. And as you see today, he's humble. And after the game, he had some very good talk about how he respect the Mali team and moving forward and what they expected to do. And they expected to take the game one at a time. And it was a very good game to watch. And basketball level side, you can see that this Angolan team, everybody could shoot threes from 1 to 5, from the point guard to the center. And that's a very tough team to guard if you don't know the whole team shoot three. So now people know they shoot three, and any team that play against them, you should know how to come up with a zone defense or something to counter attack that three and force it to a turnover for them. But number 41 for them, Valdelicio Joaquim for Angolan team. And he surprised a lot of big men and that are watching this game right now. You expect him to be on the post. He's a center and he's a center that's supposed to be on the post, but he barely got to the post unless he really have to. But he's been all the way, all the time around the perimeter. So if a big man, a center is above the three-point line, if I'm guarding 6'10", I'm guarding a 6'11 big man, he's not dangerous in the three-point line. So there is four. I don't even have to get on the stands and get ready to guard him because you feel like he's going to just pass the ball to a point guard and go post himself up, right? Mm-hmm. And that was not the case with him today. Before the Ice Police team figured out he can make three, he had to make three already. He had scored mm-hmm. 9 points off three-point line by shooting already. So that really showed that the Angolan team is very good with shooting, and they made a lot of three. Even though if they're open for two, they're trying to move the ball around to find the open man on the three-point line to shoot the three. And that really was not easy to guard by the Ice Police team today, and they are struggled with it a lot. You know, if you score 2 points, somebody come and just score 3 points. And it's hard. And if you keep shooting 3 points, whenever you hit the basketball rim, it's a long reach. You know, the rebound is very hard to catch when somebody shoots the 3 points. So that's why you were seeing that a lot of point guard just run down in the middle and tip the ball or put it back, you know, because yeah. it's a long three and you don't have an understanding of who's going to just run yeah. through the middle and look for the rebound. So they lost a lot of rebound. Yeah, they lost a lot of rebound. If you watch the game, offensive rebound on their own floor, they give them so many 2-3 second chance at the rim on the Ice Police end of the court. And that really hurt Ice Police big time. And Ice Police not a bad team. And they pretty much got a lot of good players that can do some really good stuff. And we showed that on them today. And the point guard from America that played for them, German Mitchell, and he did good. He did all he can. He was able to control the ball. And number 33, Joseph, really was turned himself to be mad toward the end. You know, you saw he had several dunk on there. And you also saw Ibrahim Thomas from Senegal that have some powerful dunk on the post. And like he pump fade and did a quick drop step toward his left side of the rim and jump it on the rim. You can see that the team have some talent, you know. And yeah. you also have Mamadou Keita that scored a lot of 3 points, and he was the best scorer for Mali team. So this team, they haven't, despite the time together, they was able to perform. They was able to score 66 points. But against a three-point team, and he also fumbled the rebound, that really hurt them. And that's what I would suggest moving forward to work on.
The last question. I know the streets of Bamako, the streets of Timbuktu, you know, Gao, yeah. the streets of Sekou, yeah. Mopti,
right.
you know,
right.
people are a bit disappointed. So what should the team yes. do moving forward so that, you know, people can cheer back in Bamako?
Yeah, so moving forward right now, what I'm seeing right now from the fans, like from what you can sense by talking to professional Malian basketball players abroad, people like me and friends that I was able to talk to, everybody's seeing this like a great experience for the Mali team and the Aspolis team. And that's one. And Malian really want them to go far. But this is a tournament that's the first time. And even if they don't go far, people, we hope they learn something with it. Like Malian say, they say if you go another country to look for money, if you don't get the money, you will get the experience. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's what Malian people see like that, you know. And people really think like they should just put this game behind and just focus on the next one and really learn from this and watch a lot of films and see and watch the game, the next game that will be Thursday with Moroccan team. And they have to watch the Moroccan game tonight. So this is a game that they will look forward to watch the Maghreb team. And we all know how they do what they do and how they work and how they hoop on the court and what is this. You will not see anything different than that team from Tunisia. You know, you will not see much different from Tunisian team, from the Egypt team that really went those Maghreb team that went their game previously. And as far for now, only Algeria lost on the Maghreb team against Senegal. And other than that, the Egypt team did really good against, I believe, Mozambique. And also Tunisia did very good against Madagascar. So you will expect a Maghreb team to come do what they do at the best, you know, spacing the floor very good and station themselves to start early. You know, they want to create the margin early. You know, and remember I told you before, Prince, you know, you understand this game of basketball. If you're playing catch up on a game, it's not good for you as a player. You know, if you're playing like you do it, I do it, it's good. It's comfortable. It's a good game. But if you're playing catch up on 10 points in game, it's not good in this kind of tournament and a conference like that, because everybody trying to win. And if you see yourself 10 point, you will play with more confidence and see that you really can beat this team. And you have to take at a time, even if you lose the ball two times, if you get 10 point ahead, even if you lose the ball two times, you still got chance, because even if they score on those two chances, it's still going to be three chances left because you still will be up by 6 points. And luckily, most of this team, they don't want to turn the ball over twice, you know, as they go. So it will give the team a lot of chance to really see that this is an experience, even though if you lost the game. And the Aspolis team, I think, like, is a very young team. They're very talented, and most of them are local. And the number 11 is a very good player. He was one of the local players that always make it to the national team against, I think his name is Papa Tandina, and also Benge Jaruma. Benge Jaruma, number 12, and he's one of the players that was he's been on the team before anybody in this Aspolis team. And he's one of the local players that make Mali Equipe National senior without going out of the country, because Mali recruit players most likely that Mali players that is playing overseas, they focus on those players more. But he's the only local player that really been consistent with his spot in the Mali national team. And I hope they will give him more chance to prove himself, because he was not on their starting five line today. And unfortunately, that's what the coach decided to go with. But I hope moving forward, he will give them chance. And you also see Mamadou Keita, and who really play against the Maghreb team, and they know how the Maghreb people work. And he play in Morocco, I believe, and Algeria. And a lot of these players are Ibrahim Keita, Ibrahim Sherif, Ibrahim Haidara from Mali, on number 5 that play for Mali, the shooter, is also a big man that can shoot from the perimeter. And he also have an experience playing against the Maghreb team and Algeria and Tunisia. So from my understanding, few people that I talked to that are here right now, and they watch the game also, they see how the Maghreb team are, you know, and they also know the experiences, and they think two players on the Mali team, 2 to 3 players on the Mali team already have an experience playing in Algeria or Morocco. And so they should be able to understand the game, the kind of game the Moroccan teams do. And hopefully the coaching will be able to change the game style and moving forward. And as you see the coaching also, for the players to really understand that this team is a shooting three teams, the coaches have to see that. You know, when I was watching the game, I was like, what is going on with this three-point team? The coaches need to come up with 2-3-2 zone defense against this team, because 2-3 zone defense will be able to give you chance for the three people on the top to move around the ball, and the two people under the rim will be there to protect the rim. That's the only way you can. That's one way for you to protect the rim against the zone, and you gotta pick them up not on the 3-point line, but a little above the 3-point line if they are very good at shooting 3-point shots.
That's Chek Tiero, a former professional basketball player from Mali who works for the VOA's French to Africa service. And Chek was talking with Prince Nesta about the Basketball Africa League action taking place in Kigali, Rwanda.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. Ike Diagu has crossed a few borders during his professional basketball career. The captain of Nigeria's national men's team has played for a half dozen NBA teams here in the USA. And Ike has also played for teams based in China, Puerto Rico, and Iran. Iron Mike Mbonye asked Ike Diagu for his thoughts on the new Basketball Africa League.
Well, I'm very excited about the BAL. It's good to see all the talent that Africa has playing, and it's good to see that it's backed by the NBA. So I'm very excited, and I'm looking forward to a very good showing.
What benefits awaits players, coaches, referees, and Africa from the Basketball Africa League?
I think the benefits of players and coaches is, just more development. I think that's the one thing that's plagued Africa, specifically with basketball, is just development and preparation. So now you're getting to play and coach in these games, and referees, you know, getting more experience, and that's what it all comes down to, you know, which will further develop our continent as a whole and just strengthen the game of basketball. I think that when you have a league as powerful that's backed by the NBA like the BAL is, it can do nothing but continue to grow up the game of basketball. You know, for the longest time, I think soccer stood up top, and soccer is still at the top, but I think basketball is gradually getting closer and closer to being neck and neck with soccer, because there's a lot of good African-born and African basketball players that live in the United States and are very talented and are very good players. And, the popularity is starting to grow. And I just think that something like this league can only do nothing but continue to bolster the trajectory that Africa basketball is on.
That's Ike Diagu, the captain of Nigeria's national men's basketball team. And Ike spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Iran.
Sporty greetings. This is Ike Diagu, captain of the Nigerian men's national basketball team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Ike. And I also want to wish the Tigers of Nigeria good luck at the Olympic men's basketball tournament in Tokyo. Nigeria's national women's basketball team, nicknamed the Tigress, has also qualified for the Tokyo Games. And mark your calendars, VOA Olympic fans. We're now 65 days away to the opening ceremony of the Tokyo Olympics. One of the sports that will be making its Olympic debut in Tokyo is skateboarding. And a 16-year-old American skateboarding prodigy, Bryce Wettstein, has her eyes on the Olympic medals podium. Maxim Moskalkov tells us more about Wettstein in this Olympic profile.
Skateboarder, surfer, student, songwriter. That's how 16-year-old California native Bryce Wettstein describes herself on her website. Since she was 13, Wettstein has been a rising star of the U.S. women's skateboarding team. She started skateboarding when she was only 5, but it seems she already knew it would be her life.
One time where my dad told me he was going to go skateboard in a pool somewhere, and I said, I kind of knew about skateboarding, and I was like, what do you mean you're going to go skateboard in a pool? And it ended up not being a pool that you swim in, but a pool that was drained of water. And it was actually a pool that you can skateboard in. And the whole time I'm just thinking, this can't be real. This isn't really happening.
Before dedicating her life to skateboarding, Bryce tried dancing, gymnastics, basketball, volleyball, and surfing. But it was skateboarding that became her true passion.
It's always there to captivate you. It's kind of like your other half in a way. And I realized that everywhere I went, it's never the same thing every day.
For Bryce's father, Max, a pilot by profession, skateboarding has always been just a hobby. Bryce's mother, Donna, wasn't too happy her daughter took up skateboarding. Too dangerous.
I wasn't really that stoked. I was glad that she was doing it, but I wanted her to experience a bunch of other things as well, dancing.
Today, Bryce has her own ramp in her backyard. Her father spent 6 years and at least $25,000 to build it for her. Many say competitive skateboarding is similar to figure skating and gymnastics, a demanding physical activity with stunts and a panel of judges that assess performance. But Bryce says it's a very inspiring sport where one needs a lot of creativity as well.
Judges don't always judge on how difficult it is or the exact precise thing, because like when you're skateboarding, there's this element of innovativeness that everybody brings to this tabletop.
Wettstein also is passionate about objecting to the stereotype that skateboarding is more suitable for men than women.
When girls are skating, they never have to look to someone else or try to fit.
Bryce's dream to make it to the Olympics is about to come true this July. She's one of Team USA's hope for a gold medal at the Tokyo Games.
If I ever got on the podium of the Olympics, honestly, I never have any words for it, because I think a lot of times you could just see that the tear ducts would unwrap and you just start crying.
But win or lose, Wettstein says taking part in the Olympics is the most important part for her. Skateboarding will include two disciplines. The first one is street skateboarding, which focuses on flat ground tricks, grinds, slides, and aerials within urban environments and public spaces. The second one is park skateboarding that takes place on special ramps. Among 80 sportsmen competing for medals, 16 are Americans. 16-year-old Bryce Wettstein won the 2019 National Championship for Women's Park and is widely seen as Team USA's top medal contender.
I want everybody this year to see that skateboarding can be everything, because a lot of times the things that emerge out of skateboarding are that you never really see the full picture of skateboarding when you have just one person, because so many people do it in a different way.
Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
One of our big recent basketball stories was Kobe Bryant being inducted posthumously into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Kobe's widow, Vanessa, spoke on his behalf at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, VOA's Jim Stevenson reports Vanessa Bryant also spoke at Kobe's memorial service last year in Los Angeles.
Speaking at Times Through Tears, Vanessa Bryant praised her husband's devotion to their family as she addressed thousands of fans gathered at the Staples Center in Los Angeles.
Kobe was the MVP of girl dads, or MVD. He never left the toilet seat up. He always told the girls how beautiful and smart they are. He taught them how to be brave and how to keep pushing forward when things get tough. God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other.
WNBA star Diana Taurasi spoke of how Kobe Bryant's talent was very evident in his daughter.
The same passion we all recognized in Kobe, obviously Gigi inherited. Her skill was undeniable at an early age. I mean, who has a turnaway fadeaway jumper at 11?
The arena was filled with many of the top NBA players, present and past. Perhaps the best of all time, Michael Jordan, recalled the early days of his interactions with Kobe Bryant.
He used to call me, text me, 11:30, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. At first, it was an aggravation, but then it turned into a certain passion. This kid had passion like you would never know.
That intense passion for basketball inspired the man who himself inspired millions who love the sport.
What Kobe Bryant was to me was the inspiration that someone truly cared about the way I played the game or the way that he wanted to play the game. He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be.
Michael Jordan could not hold back his tears as he spoke. Known for his practical jokes, Jordan says Kobe Bryant's final joke on him will be a crying meme.
Now he's got me. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me.
Kobe Bryant played his entire 20-year NBA career with the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, images of the five-time NBA champion are appearing all over Los Angeles. The murals became a place for fans like Deanna Ortega to gather, grieve, and reminisce.
We're here just to, you know, show love for Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, and just wanted to come to L.A. and just show some love and take a picture of Kobe Bryant's mural right here.
One such mural can be found in the La Brea neighborhood. Created by an L.A.-based street artist, this mural features newspaper articles highlighting Bryant's career accomplishments and some of his iconic and inspiring quotes. The tribute is also unique as it invites fans like Jolyn and Jason to make their mark on the artwork by writing messages for their fallen hero.
Because he was also a legend for everyone, not only in the game for basketball, but for everyone in their life. He inspired everyone to push themselves to do their best. So, in my opinion, I really think that having murals of Kobe Bryant and Gigi is honestly, like, something everyone would remember.
He was like an icon, you know, like, real good basketball player, you know, like, family man. You see how he is with his kids, and he just always had that positive attitude, and just, he was just idolized. He was one of my favorite basketball players growing up, him and Michael Jordan.
Another mural in Melrose is outside of Shoe Palace, a popular streetwear store. Visitors are encouraged to plaster post-it notes with messages for the L.A. Lakers star. Ruben Menyane is manager of Shoe Palace.
We started when we heard of the passing. We saw a lot of people started to show up, bring some flowers and some memorabilia, and wanting to put notes. So I took out some notepads, started writing a few, gave my employees and a platform for everybody to want. So we had a bunch of pens, marker, post-it notes so people could leave a mark. Remember Kobe, the good moments, the bad moments, what Kobe meant to them.
Mural artist J.C. Rowe says he felt bittersweet as his creation 4 years ago is now more meaningful and important to the community with the basketball legend's passing.
I think it's something special and something unique about the paper being fragile and that the messages on each note is so meaningful. Like, I feel like maybe we all found out that life is both fragile and meaningful.
Kobe Bryant and his daughter were buried in a private ceremony near the family's Southern California home.
And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that report. And that wraps up a special May 19th Basketball Africa League edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.